This Do Lectures episode features modern-day farmer Alice Holden, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2010.
Okay, this is a bit of Dutch courage, but hopefully I won't need it. It's a real honour to be here. I've only known about this for a week, and this is not my day job, but that's what I'm going to tell you about today. Okay. I think we're all aware of the impending crisis as we're coming up against in terms of energy and our finite resources. But there's been many talks over the last few days about people coming up with very creative solutions to, you know, similar ethical problems. But I want to discuss these for a very, very traditional role, and that's that of the farmer. And this is has been through my journey as a farmer for the last 10 years. By the time I get to the end of my slides, will have convinced you all that this can be the most fulfilling and rewarding and potentially important job that anyone can do. We're facing a real crisis in people going into this. We have a real deficit, and we need to remedy that. And if I can just convince a few more young people that this can be a really great job, then that's the purpose of me being here today done. In 1973, my parents had similar concerns to me. They were concerned about mass consumerism, the effects of it on the environment, but almost more importantly, the effects on the culture. Their answer to doing something about this was to move to a farm in West Wales, similar to Peter Seger. He also moved up the road from them at the same time. There was a big movement doing a similar kind of thing that revolved around self-sufficiency and trying to create a more sustainable way of living and not just taking from the environment, but self-supporting. But my parents, for them, it wasn't just about a kind of insular idea of community, as it was for quite a lot of people. This is my dad at our farm. You can see from the expression on his face that he's pretty proud of what he's doing there, and that's a lot of what's influenced me. Just actually the love that can come from having a relationship with a piece of land, and that's a real privilege. This book cover is a good example of this kind of idea that, you know, people were moving to the land to create something just as a little island that wasn't taken from outside. I think this is actually quite a misguided way of going, although it's taken me a while to realise that. A few years ago, I did a similar thing to my parents. It's funny how history seems to repeat itself, but I moved to a 100-acre farm just on the hill behind the tent over there. And I went there to manage it, but I had this idea in my head that I needed to create a new model of sustainable farming within a community, and it was slightly misguided in that I went there trying to create something completely new, but what I discovered was that the community was already there. I just had to find a way into that community and connect myself as the isolated farmer up with the community that already existed. And in fact, I needed the community far more than they needed me, although I think this, you know, is a two-way thing very much. So how did I do this? The first thing I did was I started a farmer's market in my local town. And what I found from this experience was it allowed me a way to connect up with the knowledge that already existed within the community. I think farmers are very isolated at the moment. You come into contact with a lot of other farmers. There's conventional farming wisdom that's passed around, but actually it's not the best model that we're basing things on, and actually we need a dialogue between other fields. So the simple move of starting a farmer's market at least enabled a dialogue to begin. As you can see, I'm not really your average farmer, Joe. Firstly, I'm female. That's an awful picture. it's the only one I had. I'm young-ish. I don't spend my evenings reading tractor magazines in bed. I'm not a machinery head. However, for the last 10 years, I have been working on farms ranging from 200 acres to under an acre, producing food and earning my living from this. And for me, this is what farmers do. And so I can't really deny that I am a farmer, however much I want to sometimes. and I've sustained it, as I just said, through positioning myself both on the farm but also in the community. So I can both enjoy the work but also fulfil the reasons and principles of why I do it in the first place. And this is actually, from what I've learned over time, is very much to do with the scale that I'm on. Like, the way I found of doing this is to create an intensity of scale, and actually that's been to go away from the idea that I might need to have to be on a massive piece of land. It's about intensifying the value of a small thing and also the knowledge that's around me. And it's these things that I want to discuss with you. Though I'm from a farm, this is me at Bulchwernen, I had a wonderful connection and love for a piece of land. I never ever considered for a moment of going into farming, which is quite interesting. I think there was a general succession from one generation to the next, and even though I'm from a farm, this didn't happen to me. But what it did instill in me was the privilege of having a relationship to somewhere and essentially a love for it. You can get this from growing up on a piece of land, but you can also get it from engaging in work on a piece of land. And it's a very specific thing, and it's quite hard to describe, but all the farms I've worked on, I feel like they're almost relationships I've had as a kind of love for the place. It was really after doing a degree in social anthropology at SOAS, I didn't know what to do, so I went back to Bulchwernen, where I'm from, and I happened to be fortunate enough to go and work on Peter Seger's farm with a bunch of my friends. And at this point, it was the combination of having my friends and doing work that was only positive. It was fulfilling in the product we were creating, the biodiverse environment, the group of people on the farm. It was a real kind of community. And it actually met all the things that I desired for my future career. And it was kind of the beginnings of me considering this as a path forward and taking it seriously. The second massive influence on this path was being fortunate enough to go to Ballymaloe Cookery School in Ireland. We're going to hear from Dorina a bit later about that, but it's a place that it kind of reconnects the food with the culture through cooking, and it's people from all over the world, but it's a place where the community is also directly connected with the farmland itself. So I decided this is what I had to do, but I really didn't know anything about farming, so this was a problem. So the next thing was, how did I learn? So I needed the skills, and at the time there were only kind of very theoretical courses about agriculture, and nothing very much going on that was specifically about sustainable agriculture. So having links with the Soil Association, I started talking to them and also to organic growers, and we came up with this idea of having an apprenticeship scheme for young people like myself. And the idea was that you'd spend 2 years on a farm and you'd have a grower as your mentor, and they would teach you the skills that would then empower you to go off and do the same thing on another piece of land, but in a sustainable way. This is my mentor, Pete Richardson. It was a 30-acre horticultural holding in Oxfordshire. And this is Will, the other first apprentice. I think last year there were 8. This year there are 14 going in. It's very slow, but there are more and more people going into this, and we really need them. At the time, my kind of goal from this, that I perceived was my goal, was that I would then go and start my own farm. And I had the opportunity through a philanthropist who moved actually up the road from here to go and take on the management of a 100-acre farm called Pantsaison. This is it. She owned the land. She wanted to give someone young like me the opportunity to have access to it and farm it in a sustainable way. And the land was an investment for her. So I moved there in February 2 years ago. At the time, there was nothing really there. It was like a museum of an old farm. But in the time I was there, I kept 60 sheep. I had to live in a yurt because I couldn't really afford much else, but that was my home for 2 years. Kept 2 pigs, Noel and Liam, cows, that's Johnny Cash, and planted an orchard, erected a polytunnel, and put about 1 acre into horticultural production. Also planted some fruit. The farm was completely unmodernized, but in many ways it was considered a negative thing by conventional farmers, but to me, it seemed to offer something unique, and it brought up this fresh question of what should a modern farm look like. All the buildings were untouched. It was like a museum. It was a very beautiful place. But in its current state, it was deemed unviable. There was no conventional farm infrastructure, no tracks or drainage, couldn't support heavy machinery, there were no storage, you couldn't muck out buildings with machines. It was all very much geared up for working by hand. But as well as not meeting like the technical measurements of what was viable, it failed to meet my idea of what a modern farm should be, in that it had no links to its local community. And this was a local community about to have another Sainsbury's built in it. That's this Cardigan I'm talking about, and the Tesco's that's going to double in size. And at a time where we're very much in the light of a bigger picture of an imminent energy crisis. So I felt that to replicate conventional models of farms was actually quite irresponsible, to take it down the route of heavily mechanized, monocultural, subsidy-reliant farms. That all young people are going out of was not the best way to use such an opportunity. But my biggest problem was how to steer the farm away from an oil-fed model, while at the same time all your competitors are still reaping the benefits of this model. That's a very difficult question, and not one I fully really answered. My plan was to distinguish myself by my differences and to add value to them. So to promote the local and the organic and to push them as the focus on, I tried to look at what I did have rather than what I didn't. So I put an area into small scale intensive horticulture, and the whole aim was to provide my local community with food from the farm. The real work takes time. This is a fertility building green manure of mustard and vetch. And this was in for 1 year because the soil was in such a bad state. The next move, I built raised beds by hand and planted soft fruit. These are my raised beds. So. But at the same time as I was doing all of this, I was struggling against the conventional wisdom of modern farmers. I had quite a few contractors working on the farm, and they were just putting in very basic infrastructure. But they were watching me do a lot of things by hand, and they thought I was completely bananas, really. especially Gerhard, who, if you ever need any sort of digger work doing, he's your man. He's brilliant. But at the same time as I was digging the raised beds in the field, Gerhard was putting in a track down the bottom. And this went on for about 3 days. He was watching me struggling with a spade, and he was going back and forwards, moving about, you know, 50 tons of soil a minute and stuff like that, which was quite soul-destroying when you've just got a shovel. But anyway, after about 3 days, he couldn't really take it anymore. He got off his digger, and he rarely gets off his digger. He came over to me, and he almost angrily was just like, what the hell are you doing? And he begged me just to let him use his digger to help me build the bed. And I kind of gave in to him. But I had to stop him very quickly because, of course, he was destroying the most valuable asset I had, and I didn't have much of it, and that was the soil, the topsoil. And through his digger, he was compacting it all. And you can't rush these things, and that's why it's so important that we prepare as soon as we can for sort of transition from large scale to smaller scale, perhaps. What was interesting about this scenario with Gerhard was he was just measuring something very different to me as what was the valuable resource. For me, it was the soil, and for him, it was speed and efficiency. But also, it was interesting that he was completely horrified by the fact that I was doing something with my physical energy. He found that a kind of foreign concept, and he really couldn't get his head around that. Why would you do that when you can do it with a digger, even if you have a lot of problems created by that? This was a common struggle that came up a lot. There were about three types of knowledge on the farm: my organic horticultural training. Then there was Lynn, my neighbour, who is, I suppose, in his 60s. And the generation above Gerhard and the contractors. Lynn had witnessed the farm working without all of this infrastructure. So he was great because I could, he allowed my instinct, he allowed me to have conviction about my instinct that some of this stuff was not necessary, because he actually lived for a time witnessing when we didn't rely on all these big machines and infrastructure. I was just struck by how within a generation there's been such a shift in mindset. You know, kind of whatever casualties there have been, labour's now considered far too slow and expensive, and contractors are quick and cheap, and that is where we are at. But in a funny way, it was my naivety and my lack of knowledge that gave me a great platform to question things. And it was an interesting scenario of us three, the three of us, kind of the three groups coming together, something that doesn't usually happen on farms. There's only one type of knowledge, and that's part of the problem, I think. So my basic principle was to not be reliant on fuel, to sell locally, and I needed to work out a way of doing this. So it was surprisingly easy to start a market. As soon as I started focusing what was available to me in the local community, rather than just constantly thinking about the negatives and what there wasn't in terms of infrastructure and everything. So all I had to do was go about 2 miles from the farm gate to the local town, identify a place that had a beautiful setting, a cafe, toilets, and public funding, and go into there and ask them, you know, why not start a market here? And turned out they had a lot of public funding boxes to tick about doing community work, and they were delighted to have something to do with the money that they had spent over this year. So it was very easy. So St. Dog's Market started from there. This allowed me to meet a lot of people. And they were very generous with their time, but most importantly, their knowledge. This man here is a man called Tyvion Toft, and he used to live on the farm next to Pantsaison, and he used to take a cart once a week to 2 miles down the road laden with veg from a big greenhouse. And he assured me it was a very lucrative business, and he was quite smug about this. The apprenticeship scheme gave me a very specific type of knowledge about the skills, and this was valuable in terms of seasons, varieties, diseases, fertility, but it was only part of the knowledge that I needed to acquire to survive as a modern farmer. That's quite interesting. Sometimes it's the grey areas between small and big, ownership and responsibility, what have allowed me to create an intensity. And actually, I found this is much easier on a small scale. This is us in the forest garden last night. So it's an intensity of production, but also knowledge. I was a bit slow to realise that I didn't have to do everything myself. and in fact, I realised that I, just by identifying something like forest, that already has many aspects I was trying to create on a farm, I could use those to my advantage. I didn't have to own the land I was going to. I could join up with something else, and then we could bring mutual benefit to one another. I still have a lot of work in trying to make the garden more viable as its own unit here, but that's something I'm keen to do. This was building the garden at the top of the hill, just in March that was. And I'm just going to finish with this picture of Dad again, because it's about I mean, I've done this because of worries about the environment and large-scale concerns, but really, fundamentally, the main reason I've done it is because I love the work, and it's a certain type of engagement that you get through working on a piece of land, and I really want more people to share in that. So that's what I hope for the future. And that's me in my polytunnel at the top with a similar expression, slightly more strained, perhaps, but no. Yeah, so hopefully I may have at least made you think about farms a little bit differently. And, that's my aim today.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.